Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 3rd. A couple of notes of business for people. First of all, a little bit of a sad announcement for the committee. I want to announce that Jonathan Fortner will be taking a new position with the House Majority Caucus, so this will be his last committee hearing with us. He just couldn't handle it. So I want to thank Jonathan's your name, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I want to thank Jonathan for your service to us. He served very professionally and did a great job. And we're going to miss you, but hopefully we still see you around, Jonathan. So thanks.
Thank you.
Also, a reminder to members of the committee that we recognize that people are busy. If you're not going to be here, you do not have to call the committee legislative assistant to inform them of your attendance. If you're not present, it is assumed that you are excused. No reason to check in. Again, obviously, we prefer that you be here, but again, you can. If you're not here, you're automatically excused. No reason to call. Next, we are dealing without committee pages. Therefore, Representative Lunin and Isaacson will be functioning as the committee pages today for the... Oh, okay. I guess we have a committee page now, so unfortunately that lost our chance there. And then also, I think we have some members of the working group who put some work in on this project this summer. Perhaps Representative Hackbarth might...
He's right
here. There he is, right there. So Representative Hackbarth, if at any time, if you feel the need to approach the testifiers table and be involved, I want to thank you for your work and everything you did to put in on it. So, and then also, is Harry here? Oh, all right, Harry, thank you for your work as well. And what's Stephanie? Is she here?
Stephanie is here.
Okay. So, again, thank all members of staff, DFL and GOP, as well as nonpartisan staff for the work they put in on this. So, Representative Mahoney, are you ready to go with Senate File 694?
Sure.
Should we just kick that off really quick? Do you have everyone you need here?
I do have everybody here for questions, but hopefully I don't need anybody
for questions. All right. And Representative Mahoney, are you going to the general register with that, or does it need to make another stop?
Mr. Chair, I believe it is general register.
All right. So Representative Mahoney moves that House File, Senate File 694 be recommended to pass and referred to the general register. Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair, this is a bill concerning the St. Paul Port Authority. It is a companion bill to the bill we heard in committee, voted on, put it in the omnibus bill, voted off the House floor, and somehow it fell off the table in June sometime. What this does is it's a number of technical changes, and the biggest one and the one that I've been asked about the most is it eliminates a need for the City of St. Paul and the City Council to vote on revenue bonds from the Port Authority. They have no skin in that particular game. It's all on the Port Authority, so they everyone has said that we don't really want to be involved in it. The Port Authority is good with it. The City Council and the Mayor are good with it. That's it, and Ms. Lauder is here in case there's questions that I don't have an answer to.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lori Lauder, Senior Vice President of Business and Intergovernmental Relations, St. Paul Port Authority.
Thank you. And do you have any presentation, or are you just here to answer questions?
I'm just here for questions,
Great
Mr.
Testimony.
Chair. Your pleasure.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions or comments. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Mahoney, any closing comments?
It's a good bill. Let's get it out of here.
With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion to have House File Senate File 694 recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Motion is
adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, next we're going to take up Senate File 209. As soon as I find my packet here. The chair will move Senate File 209 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The first thing we have is a delete all amendment to put the bill in the form that I would like. And this is the amendment labeled S0209DE1-1. And the intent would be that we adopt the delete all amendment as a document and then that we have nonpartisan staff review that. Is there any discussion regarding getting the bill in the form the author would like? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So if we go to staff here, again, we're working off the fiscal note and the House Research Summary and the Delete Everything Amendment, S0209DE1-1. Ms. Hendricks, if you would like to cover the, or perhaps, just, I don't know, I believe you're covering the fiscal note?
Mm-hmm.
If you could just cover the fiscal note and cover the substance of the bill if you need nonpartisan staff can hand off. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be working off the fiscal note that's titled HF 2032-1A UI Benefit Extended. On the front page, you'll see that there is no state cost. This is because any cost to the UI Trust Fund is outside the state treasury. So in the fiscal note, the cost will be discussed and described, but it's just not on the front page because of that. So turning to page one, or page two of the fiscal note, I won't go through everything in detail. I'll just highlight a couple things that are in the bill that affect the cost estimate as provided by deed. So on page two...
Ms. Hendricks, if I could just interrupt you for a second. In my packet, the fiscal note was included in the House File 2032 folder. So if you're looking for the fiscal note, if you don't have it, it might be in the other packet. I don't know if that's the case for others. So if you just want to give everyone a second to find these. So Representative Mahoney. Representative Hortman, I'm sorry.
That's right. Just to catch up to where we are, so which file number are we?
We're on Senate File 209. We've adopted the Delete All Amendment, which is what the research summary and the fiscal note are based off.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was the A1 amendment?
No, this was the S0209DE1-1 amendment. The Delete All Amendment. That's what the fiscal note and the research summary are. And let's give everyone some time to find the fiscal note. We got it. We good? Ms. Hendricks, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll point out that the fiscal note is on House File 2032, and 1A is that's how it's in the system. That doesn't follow necessarily the coding of the revisor, so that might result in a little confusion. It's on the House file and that particular amendment. The amendment language is the same for the amendment for the House file, the Senate file, so there's only one fiscal note for the House file, but the cost estimates apply to the Senate file and as amended in the same way, just as a clarification. So on page two of the fiscal note, under bill description, the only thing I'll point out is that this bill and it says under number four, kind of in the applicants that will benefit from this, that this does not apply to applicants that are eligible for the trade adjustment assistance. So that leaves out a group of laid off employees, and that you'll see that in the cost estimate later on in the fiscal note. It also, the bill, the proposal at the bottom of this page, it says the bill proposal does not specifically exempt reimbursing employers, and there are a group of reimbursing employers that don't pay upfront UI taxes. So these employers will still be charged for benefits paid. Turning to the next page, page three, there's at the top, there's an explanation of the TAA program and how the bill affects those eligible for those benefits and that they're not eligible under this bill. I won't go through all of that. Article 2, Section 1, the bill provides a cap on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, and this is an ongoing provision that in case the average high-cost multiple is one at the end of a calendar year, December 31st of any given year, taxes must be reduced by the amount in excess of the average high-cost multiple of one. So in excess, the deed is to look at the balance in the trust fund on December 31st and the average high-cost multiple. That is a federal formula that is used to give states an indication of what needs to be in a trust fund to cover 1 year of benefits, and it's based on looking back at the three worst years kind of that a state has experienced in terms of paying out benefits. So that is what that AHCM refers to. So that difference between the two, if the balance in the trust fund is in excess of that average high cost multiple of one, that needs to be the taxes for the next year are to be reduced by that amount. That is Article 2 of Section 1, and in Article 2, Section 2 provides a one-time reduction of taxes due in the current calendar year, 2016, and the calculation there is the UI Trust Fund level on December 31st of 2015 minus 1% of total wages for the calendar year 2014. Further to the assumptions, I'll just point out that Deed makes a distinction between two groups, the primary group, which is the workers employed directly in the iron mining industry, and then the secondary group, workers employed by an employer providing goods or services to the iron mining industry. So you'll see two tables for these two different groups on pages 4 and 5 of your of the fiscal note. So on page 4, kind of halfway through, there's the benefit cost for the primary group. Because of those laid-off workers that are also eligible for TAA, and those are excluded under this bill proposal, Deed estimates as roughly 400 laid-off employers who will apply for extended benefits. And so that is in that table. You can see 400 in the most left-hand column, and they expect all those laid-off employees, workers, iron mine workers, to fully use the extended benefits of 26 weeks. So the maximum number of weeks, so that is at 100%. So the Deed has estimated about a costed UI trust fund of about $6.7 million. Going to the next page 5, this is where Deed has estimated the cost of the UI trust fund for that secondary group of workers. They use numbers from the 2008 recession and expect about an exhaustion rate of 50% based on that, and they expect that number of employees or workers to qualify under this bill to be about 2,350, and an exhaustion rate of 80%, so that leads to about $23 million cost to the UI Trust Fund. And at the end of that table on the bottom, you'll see the total cost of benefits for both groups is estimated to be roughly that 29 or almost 30 million, or to be a complete almost 30 million to the UI Trust Fund from the secondary group and the primary group combined. Then there's the explanation below that there is still a cost of reimbursing employers because those are not, that's not defined in the bill, that those are also covered in the bill, so these reimbursing employers will still be charged for the extended benefits charged under this bill. Article 2, under assumptions, it lays out the cost estimates for Article 2, Section 1 and Section 2. The estimates are for, under Section 1, for the calendar year 2017 taxes. So the trust fund is estimated to be about $1.8 billion on December 31st, 2016. The average high-cost multiple is estimated to be $1.617 billion. And so the difference between the two is $183 million. So that would be the reduction that is applied to 2017 taxes, UI taxes. However, if Article 2, Section 2 is implemented, that would also be include a reduction in the trust fund, and so Deed expects that if that is implemented, there will actually not be a reduction in 2017 because the UI trust fund balance will be below that average high cost multiple of one. So Article 2, Section 2 explains the reduction for 2016 taxes. The value on December 31st, 2015 was about $1.659 billion. 1% of total wages for 2014 was $1.387 billion, so a difference of, and thus the calculated reduction of $271 million. So that would be applied to 2016 UI taxes. And again, because if that is implemented, the trust fund would fall below the average high cost multiple of 1 on December 31st of this year, meaning that probably the reduction for 2017 would not happen.
And Ms. Hendricks, one, and I don't think it materially changes the fiscal note, but under Article 2, Section 1, the estimate is based off of a growth factor of 4% to the AHCM. Do you know where in the fiscal note does it define? Like, for example, we have a 4%. That's sort of the buffer. It has to be above the average high cost multiplier before it would take into effect. Is that reflected in the fiscal note anywhere?
No, that particular discussion is not I think included. But I think because this would be above that 4%, above the average high cost multiple, in effect it would be exactly the same.
Representative Mahoney.
I was just wondering if there was going to be a test on all that.
Gosh, I hope not.
Just to check if people understood it.
Mr. Weeks, did you want to add it? And that kind of covered the fiscal side of it. Do you want to add anything to the review of the bill?
Sure. There's not much to add. I think Ms. Hendricks covered the tax reduction components, substance and fiscal aspects, so I'll just go quickly through the Iron Mining extended benefits. This extends unemployment benefits to anyone, iron workers who were laid off after March 1st, 2015, either from an iron mining industry employer or from an employer that directly supplies goods or services to an iron mining industry employer. To be eligible, you have to have exhausted your regular benefit account. If you qualify for a new regular benefit account during the pendency, when you're entitled to the extended benefits, you get whatever benefits are higher, you get the benefit of that. If you got the federal benefits under the TAA program, the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, you're not entitled to the extended benefits. And it is 26 total weeks, 6 months of benefits, and these benefits do not affect an employer's future taxes. That is to say, they will not affect an employer's experience rating going forward. And then there's some legislative findings at the end that speak for themselves.
Ms. Newman, did you have anything?
Do not. Mr. Weeks did a great job.
Thank you. So at this point, we'll move to public testimony. The first testifier is Commissioner Katie Clark-Steven. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. Katie Clark-Steven, Commissioner Deed. Good to see all of you. Thank you for allowing me to speak about these critical issues currently facing the Iron Range. As you've discussed, Minnesota's unemployment insurance system helps relieve economic distress for workers and their families, in addition to serving as a stabilizer for the overall economy by shoring up workers' purchasing power during economic downturns. Unfortunately, there are some economic situations so severe that standard UI benefits are not sufficient. Deed estimates that nearly 2,000 workers employed directly by the mines have been affected by at least a temporary layoff since this crisis began. We also know that there are an additional approximately 4,700 unemployed Iron Range workers in construction, manufacturing, or wholesale trades that have been impacted. And of this group, about 1,200 of these individuals will have exhausted their regular UI benefits by the first day of session next Tuesday. Given these unprecedented job losses in an otherwise strong economy, Governor Dayton and I strongly believe that these additional benefits for Iron Range workers are appropriate and, more importantly, the right thing to do. These benefits need to be passed in the first week of session. In the past, the Minnesota Legislature has provided additional weeks of UI benefits to a variety of different groups of workers in special circumstances. A few examples include airline workers laid off during 9/11 and farm workers affected by the recent avian flu crisis. Many workers are severely impacted and at a relatively low cost of approximately $29 million, all of which would be absorbed by the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, not the general fund. We can give these workers the lifeline they so desperately need. I greatly appreciate that the House and Senate have committed to acting quickly to make these extended benefits available. I am concerned, however, that the benefits have been tied to a one-time $272 million tax break for businesses, nearly 10 times the cost of these extended benefits. The most concerning aspect of this one-time action is that it would cause the UI trust fund balance to dip below the recommended trust fund solvency level. A solvent UI trust fund is important because, because we know that a recession can deplete reserves quickly. For reference, the UI Trust Fund paid out $1.7 billion in 2009 alone, more than the fund's current $1.569 balance in just 1 year. As many members know, the U.S. Department of Labor sets a minimum recommended UI Trust Fund solvency level of an average high-cost multiple of 1.0. The average high-cost multiple takes into consideration how much a state can expect to pay out in UI benefits during an economic downturn. As of the U.S. DOL's last calculation, Deed's UI trust fund balance was at an average high-cost multiple of 1.06. Minnesota was one of only 18 states that meets federal solvency standards. This proposal would knock Minnesota out of that group, bringing the projected UI trust fund balance an estimated $100 million below federal standards. Ultimately, we believe this cut would not be in the best interest of employers. This cut is taking that $272 million, grabbing it from the UI trust fund, which means that it puts us in a position as our economy changes for that next trigger, that next tax increase to occur even sooner for businesses. So I urge the committee to send the governor a clean bill providing extended unemployment insurance benefits to Iron Range workers without the one-time $272 million tax break for businesses. And we urge this clean bill to come forth during the first week of legislative session. Hundreds of workers and families need this assistance now. They will be falling off of unemployment insurance benefits. Many already have and are in great need of some assistance. We also know for the future of the Iron Range economy, we want to retain these workers in that region of the state, and we need to help help them be able to stay in that area. So thank you again for the opportunity to be here today and for all of your work to support the Iron Range in this time of need.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Seeing no questions from the committee, we appreciate your testimony. Next is Jennifer Schaubach from Minnesota's AFL-CIO. And on deck is Cam Wenton. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jennifer Schaubach. I am the Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and I actually thought I would take this opportunity to introduce our new president, Bill McCarthy, and let him actually testify today. So if I may.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bill McCarthy, President of the Minnesota AFL-CIO.
Mr. McCarthy, is this your first time testifying before the committee of the legislature?
No.
Oh, darn it. Right. I was going to get you on the treat. I was going to get you on the treats, no. But that's okay. All right, sorry. Please continue with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 2032 and Senate File 209 as amended. We urge you to pass a clean bill with a 26-week extension without other provisions. We believe the two provisions in the amended bills before you should be addressed and passed separately. The Steelworkers Union represents over 12,000 working families in Minnesota. A large percentage of them work in the taconite mines on the Iron Range of northeastern Minnesota. And as we know, thousands of these workers have already been out of work for more than 6 months and are likely to remain out of work for some time yet. The massive layoffs on the Iron Range have obviously affected the larger economy. Businesses and workers supplying and maintaining the mines, the grocery stores, restaurants, etc., have also had to lay off workers or close. A major cause of the massive number of unemployed miners is the dumping of steel by foreign countries, pushing steel prices to a 10-year low and devastating more than half of the 11 mining operations on the Iron Range. We are glad that the federal government is finally acting to rein in this injustice. However, workers on the iron range, 600 of them running out of benefits this week and next, cannot wait any longer. Workers have mortgages, need to feed their families, and need to heat their homes. The Minnesota AFL-CIO stands ready to work on the Trust Fund Solvency Business Unemployment Tax Refund in Article 2 as a separate issue. We did so last session, and we are willing to do so again this year. Workers are struggling and need your help immediately. Holding hostage extended benefits for unemployed workers on the iron range in exchange for huge tax giveaways for businesses and putting the future of the solvency of the IU Trust Fund at risk is unconscionable. Please pass and move the 26-week unemployment extension with no other provisions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair and members. Our legislative director, Jennifer Schaubach, or I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions from members of the committee, we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next is Cam Winton, and on deck is Brian Carr. Mr. Winton, is this your first time testifying before the legislature?
It is. I hear there are treats.
Yes, that's you're supposed to bring treats. That is correct.
Oh, I'm supposed to bring treats. Well,
you did not bring
great
treats.
Great first impression for me, then.
No you treats. Did not bring treats?
I mean.
Okay, next on the testimony list is... No. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Cameron Winton. I'm the Director of Energy and Labor Management Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supports House File 2032 and Senate File 209 as amended. There are a few key reasons why, and I'd like to share them with you now if I could. Bottom line, this bill is sound policy that provides much needed reforms to our unemployment insurance system for the benefit of all employers across Minnesota, and in turn helps to create a healthy economy for all Minnesotans. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, as you may know, represents as 2,500 members, and between them, our 2,500 members have about 500,000 employees. The companies that comprise the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce are of all sizes and stretch to every corner of our state. These reforms would provide benefits for all of those employers in the following way. There is more money in the unemployment trust fund, unemployment insurance trust fund, than there needs to be. It is good news that across Minnesota, we have a record low unemployment rate. I think I'm telling you something you already know when I say that our unemployment rate was recently measured about 3.5% off of the administration's own numbers. The administration went on to say in its recent forecast that the labor market appears to be tightening even further. Unemployment will stay low. At the same time, though, the cost of unemployment insurance is too high. Of all the states in the nation, Minnesota has the second highest cost of unemployment insurance for employers. And so we see this bill, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce sees this bill as a good opportunity to strengthen the system by bringing down costs, reducing a fixed cost that Minnesota employers have to face. And that's why we do believe that it's sound policy to enact these reforms. As folks probably know, this has been done before. Reforms have been done before. And back in 2013, members of this very committee, with the support and signature of Governor Dayton, provided significant unemployment insurance cost relief for the following reason. I'm quoting from the office of Governor Mark Dayton. When we do this, I'll tell you when I start the quote, the unemployment insurance reduction would, quote, give Minnesota employers more money to invest in their businesses and our economy, end quote. And then later in the same document, Governor Dayton went on to say that this reduction in unemployment insurance costs would provide employers additional funds they can then use to expand or improve their business, hire new workers, and grow our state's economy, end quote. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce believes that enacting reforms now would achieve the very same goals that Governor Dayton laid out and implemented. And for that reason, we support these bills as amended.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Winton, I was wondering if you could just correct the record because I have an email that I know your organization received from 8 local chambers making up the entire Northeastern Minnesota Chamber Executive Association.
Representative Mitzel, hold on. We've got a phone close to a mic somewhere here. If we could pull it back.
Probably about 40 of them, right?
Well, if you could put them in your chair, and if the sound happens again, press the mute button. And if you press the mute button and the sound stops, that means it's you.
Okay.
So just if you could have to do that, because not only for the recording, but also so members can hear. Sorry about that. Representative Mitzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want Mr. Winton to correct the public record, because I've got a letter that is in front of you all members and available for those in the public from every chamber in northeastern Minnesota that strongly opposes having the UI language tied to the relief. And so I was just curious when you said all of Minnesota supports this and the Minnesota Chamber, if you would correct that so it is proper that my entire region, including Duluth, opposes what you're supporting right now.
Mr. Winton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mitzel, thank you for your comment. Respectfully, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce does have member businesses across the state. As I said, we have approximately 2,500 members with 500,000 employees between them. And the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supports this legislation. I am aware of an email that a member of the chamber with additional signatories sent to a federation member, a local and regional chamber of commerce, sent to the president of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce provided our response to that member, CCing everyone who'd been CC'd, and we conveyed that we were supporting this very bill today, and therefore believed that we were achieving the overall goals of everybody involved.
Representative Mitzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I find that really confusing, because in their email that they had sent to your president, they asked for a clean bill. Right now, the politics that have been happening around the special session and the tenor in which it appears that we're going to be starting this session are essentially that members in my district who aren't getting paychecks, and I talk to maybe on average, say, 8 a day since last July, people I get to tell, there's nothing available. You're essentially out of luck right now. But essentially, the message to you from our local business community wasn't that they opposed working on taxes. They want to work on taxes with you. They oppose you working with this party that we're here in the majority today in tying the relief for the workers who need it to the benefits and the extension that is available and tying that to the relief. And the money that you're essentially taking out of our community by doing this is why they oppose that. So now we have, what, $27 million that we just discussed in committee here today? And $27 million is being held up from going into our committees because clearly the governor didn't support a special session at the end because of the language being tied together. So I don't see if anything's changed, but essentially what you're telling my local chambers, my communities, my local businesses, more importantly than the chambers themselves, and I know a lot of them, I've been on the phone with lots of them, that it's okay to continue having a political football to kick around. So I want you to take that back to the Minnesota Chamber and, you know, properly state for the record here today, essentially what you're supporting is allowing my constituents and Representative Moline's and Representative Eklund's and Representative Ansell's and Representative Murphy's and Representative Sundin's and Representative Simonson's and Representative Schultz that we don't matter, and that our local input saying that this is actually hurting. The real thing that hurts is that these benefits aren't getting out, that the money's not getting spent in our local mom and pop shops or at Target or Walmart or wherever people are shopping, and that is abhorrent.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions, but some of them might be for the folks at Deed. My first question is, how much do we need to have in the UI fund to pay during a recession?
Sure. And I welcome Mr. Chair.
Well, why don't we have Mr. Caligiuri come up?
Sure.
Do you have any other questions for Mr. Winton or not?
Wondering if you were at the Ways and Means hearing on February 29th. And if you heard what the state economist had to say about the potential for a future recession.
Mr. Winton.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, I wasn't physically at that hearing, but I'm aware of what the overall economic picture is and what state employees have said on it. And the chamber remains confident that with a record low unemployment rate and a labor market that Governor Dayton's administration has described as tightening, there is more than enough money in the unemployment insurance trust fund right now. And we therefore believe that these proposed reforms are prudent and sound and would provide important relief for all employers across the state.
One more question is maybe for him more than the deed folks, is what is the process by which the Minnesota Chamber takes a position on a specific bill? What mechanism do you use to get the input of your members? And specifically in this case, how many of your members have you had direct conversations with about whether they support a clean bill?
Sure.
Dr. Winton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Representative. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce has a robust process for bringing in the viewpoints of all stakeholders. With 2,500 members, it takes a long time, and we have a number of different fora where we solicit viewpoints. In no particular order, we have listening sessions around the state. We have standing committees on various subject matter areas where interested members of the chamber can come on in and share their views. We have an ongoing dialogue via phone, email, every method you could consider with all of our members. We have newsletters and responses to those newsletters. We have meetings and functions.
Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to get at...
Hold on.
With regard to this...
Hold on, Representative Hortman. Mr. Witten, finish your answer, and then we'll go to Representative Hortman for a follow-up.
We're getting a comprehensive view of all chamber
communications. Mr. Winton, continue with your testimony, and then we'll go back to Representative Hortman for another question. Mr.
Sure.
Winton.
Regarding this particular bill, the chamber is focused on the UI reform piece. We don't see it as our role to weigh in on an unemployment benefit extension, as important as it might be. We are not an elected body. We don't weigh in on everything under the sun. And so I want to emphasize, and if I could, while still being procedurally appropriate, I think this may be relevant as a response to a comment that Representative Metza made, Mr. Chair. The chamber supports this bill. And as everyone here knows, the bill includes prudent reforms to the unemployment insurance system and a 26-week extension, not just for miners, but also for those impacted at other companies, not just mining companies. The chamber supports this total package, and we see it as an important piece of policy that we support.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with regard to this specific bill, what I heard you saying is that there's two separate issues. There's getting relief to the miners on the Iron Range, and then there's a separate issue of UI reform. And on either issue, what specific communications have you had with your members? Have you talked to anybody at Cargill, Target, General Mills, 3M, to say, is it the position of you as a Minnesota Chamber member that we should not give steelworkers relief unless we tie it with some unrelated unemployment insurance reform? Have you asked that question of your members?
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, respectfully, the premise of your question is not accurate. The chamber doesn't write legislation. The chamber doesn't tie anything together. The chamber doesn't sit around and think what gets paired with what. The chamber, both in the lead up to the special session and right here at this very moment, was asked to comment upon technical aspects of reforms to the unemployment insurance system. And the chamber has consistently done so by noting that they are prudent reforms that would provide benefits for employers across the state and that it would be good policy to enact.
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Winton, what I took your testimony to mean here today is that you are encouraging members of this committee to vote in favor of this bill. And what I heard the other testimony to be is that we need to get relief to steelworkers on the Iron Range as fast as possible, and that Articles 2 and 3 are in the way of getting that relief to steelworkers. So when I hear you testifying to encourage members to support legislation, which is problematic, I'm asking you how it is that your business organization took the position to support this legislation, knowing that it's problematic. And the premise of my question is, I don't think that your members would agree with what you're saying right here. And so that's why I asked about the mechanism by which you ask your members before you take a position on an issue. Because I think that what I often hear from the Minnesota Chamber lobbyists is different than what I hear from the Minnesota Chamber members. And so I'm very unclear as to how you actually get input from your members about what positions to take on legislation here at the state capitol. And I still, after all the words that you've shared with us, have no idea how you go through a process to decide which bills you oppose and which bills you support.
Mr. Caligiuri, if you could come down. Representative Ortman had a question for you, too. And we'll finish up with Representative. Oh, no, we're going to wrap up Mr. Representative Ortman, and then we'll move on to Representative Mahoney. Representative Mahoney and Simonson. Representative Ortman, you had a question for Mr. Caligiuri?
Yeah, Mr. Caligiuri, just with regard to the balance in the fund, what's a prudent and responsible thing to do? What I heard the commissioner testify to is that if we were to pass this bill, we would be, I think in her words, it would take us $100 million below recommended levels, and that in the last recession, in 1 year alone, we paid out $1.7 billion. And so my question is, how much do we pay out in an average recession? We had a pretty terrible one pretty recently. And what is the likelihood of a recession in Minnesota in the future based upon our state economic forecast that we just got last week?
Mr. Caligiuri, if you could state your name for the record so the tape knows who's testifying.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri. I'm the Director of Unemployment Insurance at Deed. I really can't comment on the recession issue. I mean, that's something that is for the economists. I know that we, generally speaking, since 1900, we have a recession on average every 8 years. And as of last December, we're 8 years out from going into the last one. We paid out $1.7 billion in 2009, and then in 2010, we paid out another $1.4 billion. We ended up deeply in debt to the federal government. It took nearly 3 years to climb out of debt.
Thank you.
And Mr. Caligiuri, we'll just call you back if someone else summoned you up, if that's okay. So next is Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if Mr. Winton could come to the table, that would be appreciated. Mr. Chair, when I first met him, he introduced himself as the new Ben Gerber.
Ooh.
And Ben and I actually liked each other, much like you and I. So, but I thought that was being risky.
And if Mr. Gerber is listening to the tape, we're all nodding with pleasure.
I'm hoping he is. He might have been texting me a couple of times already today.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winton, you said that this has been done before. No, this has not been done before. I would suspect that whoever you asked to explain or your reading of it, they were mistaken. What was done before, I'll explain it this way. We have a pretty unique system in Minnesota that ratchets up the unemployment rate, and I'm sure you know that. And what we did before was we advanced by 6 months and a year a couple of those rates going back down when the economy was coming out of a recession. And gratefully so, we added 120,000 new jobs. So our unemployment, and that was part of it, because there was $500 million that those credits kept in the pocket of businesses or got it into their pocket a year early. What we're doing here is essentially putting, we're trying to do this credit right now. So an entirely different credit. It's not a reduction in those rates. So it's a very, very different piece that we're doing. And although I don't believe the economists that we're heading or we're looking at a recession, I think the American economy is very strong. And I can't remember how many millions of jobs have been created over the last 7 years. But I know it's well in advance of 10 or 12 million jobs.
My fear with this bill, and I don't understand why business, or maybe they don't understand, because frankly, after 18 years, I'm just starting to truly grasp unemployment. If we were to have a bit of a slowdown, not a recession, just a bit of a slowdown, you would automatically have a $31 million ratchet up for every employee. So if you have one employee, it's $31. If you have 1,000 employees, it's $31,000. That they have to pay on top of what they're already paying. And this 272 gets us within millions, not hundreds of millions, but tens of millions of that ratchet point, that first $31 escalation. And not much farther down, another $100 million would get us to the second step, which would ratchet it up an additional $31. So I don't know that you likely informed your members of that. Did you inform your members of how that would happen?
Mr. Winton.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, thank you for the comments and the questions, sir. If I could back up one step and then come around to the question you just posed, please. Thank you.
Certainly.
I am aware that the mechanism that you and Representative Isaacson and the governor all approved of back in 2013 was a different mechanism here than what we're contemplating here. I fully agree with you there. My point when I said that we've done this before is we have flowed dollars to employers by reducing their unemployment insurance costs, and we have done so in a way that makes the trust fund solvency lower than 1.0. We've done that before because of the very dynamic, and we felt comfortable doing so in the past, and we feel comfortable doing so again now.
Well, some people.
Fair enough. Because of the very dynamic that you just mentioned, sir, and that is that, for anyone unaware, if the trust fund balance goes below 75% of the federal solvency level, there's already a replenishment mechanism written right into the statute. No one is trying to change that. Let me say that again, because I think that's a really important point here. There's already a replenishment mechanism written right into the statute, and no one is trying to change it. If the trust fund goes below 75% of the solvency level, unemployment insurance costs for employers increase to replenish the unemployment insurance trust fund, and no one's trying to change that. And so respectfully, Representative Mahoney, I'd be happy to compare numbers with you, whether now or later, but based on the chamber's analysis, we think that there's enough of a buffer, enough of a cushion between where we will end up with this proposed credit and that 75% threshold that we do not run any risk of triggering a tax increase. Does that answer the question you posed?
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It answers half of it, which I fully disagree with Bill. I'm Ben. But
I get a treat for that, right?
I fully disagree with that, that buffer is a sufficient buffer. But what I had asked was that do you believe or do you feel that your members are sufficiently understanding of the potential of another $62 charge for unemployment on top of what they're already paying if this goes through? And it's likely, because I'm not thinking we're going to have a recession. We're certainly not going to have a depression like we did. I called it a depression. But I suspect there's going to be an economic correction. The stock market just corrected over the last 3 months, and that's typically a harbinger of what's coming at us. Now, I don't, the stock market is not taken into the tank. It hasn't become Titanic and sank to the bottom. And it's floated back up, and every once in a while it floats back down. So I think we'll have some of that too. My fear is that once we do this, we'll have a problem. Your members will suffer that rate increase much sooner than what they would otherwise. And so that's going to, we're going to be disagreeing on that, and I'm going to, I'll give you a chance to answer that question if you feel that your members are sufficiently understanding of unemployment, that they knew that's coming before they, I'm sure you had like a caucus where thousands of people showed up and you had to find new ballots and everything else and they voted on it.
Sure. Representative Mahoney, so the question was?
Are your members sufficiently understanding of what's going to happen, that there is a possibility that they could get a $31 per employee bump or a $62 bump if we start falling into this, if we do this kind of a $272 million credit or tax cut or whatever it's being called, and then put in the other piece, which if I understand it correctly, we're going to limit the average, what is it, AHCM, average high
cost
something multiplier.
Right.
Mr. Wynn.
Mr.
Next
Chair.
Be a yes or no. Because I got another one here.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, let me come around to your question by saying the following, just to set the stage. I'm quoting from Minnesota Management and Budget, from the February 2016 Budget and Economic Forecast Document, page 35. Quote, labor market. Minnesota's labor market continues to tighten up. Mm-hmm. Steady job growth has helped push the state's unemployment rate down to 3.5% in December, one of the lowest among states with major metropolitan areas. This is below the low point of the previous 2002-2007 economic expansion, end quote. That's the setting for the chamber's confidence that even with this prudent credit, there will still be enough money in the unemployment insurance trust fund so that Minnesota can weather any storm. Because, as I mentioned, it's already written into the statute that if the trust fund goes below 75% of the federal solvency level, employers have to replenish that fund. To your other question, sir, about what the members know, I think our members know very well that their costs go up if the trust fund gets down to a certain level. I also think they engage the wise counsel of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce to keep an eye.
Your opinion, right, Ben?
To keep an eye on details like this. And the Chamber supports this legislation because we think it's a prudent reform.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question, Mr. Chair, and I'll be done. So when a disaster strikes the business community, not the workers in the business community, but the business community, will the chamber be okay when they're held hostage for a 10-to-1 return on investment, or I should say on their disaster relief? So we're going to ask for $10 back for every dollar or dollar of relief we give to business, because that's exactly what you're asking, is that we hold workers hostage with this bill that you support, and your members understand entirely. We're holding workers hostage. We're holding families' mortgage payments, food on their table, hostage for a business tax cut. Does that seem reasonable? And are you going to be supportive when the table may be turned? Because we're setting a precedent here. And it's a big one that we've never set before.
Mr. Winton, and then we're going to go to Simonson, Isaacson, Metza again, and Mr. Toby, and Mr., and I'm going to say this wrong, Amianetti?
Amianetti.
All right. Salute. You guys are on deck if you want to maybe come back and sit over there so we're ready to go. And then after that is Brian Carr, and then wrapping up is Mike Hickey, and then after that we go to public testimony of anyone who hasn't signed up in advance. So, good. Mr. Winton?
Sure. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, responding to your question, of course I disagree vigorously with the premise. The Chamber supports this overall bill, and I'm here to testify about the technical aspects of the unemployment reform and how we believe it's a prudent reform that provides benefits for all employers across the state.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Winton, my question, I think, will be to you. But, you know, I think to try to bring some clarity to what I understand here, by and large, it seems like Minnesotans in my district and Minnesotans that I talk to on the range and Representative Metza's district and others, they just want this issue resolved, right? I mean, they just want to see these benefits get extended. And I think the message that I hear when I come down and as I came down today was just do it, get it done with, take the politics out of it, and let's move on. So I think what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing here is that there's a lot of discussion around Article 2 of the DE amendment, which has to do with the UI reform. So my question to you would be, as we move through this process this afternoon, if we and I think that there might be an amendment to do this, but if we essentially split Article 1 and Article 2 in this bill and just take up Article 1 or some form of Article 1, would your organization support that, oppose that, or be neutral on it? Or can you just give me a sense of where you would be if we just set Article 2 aside for another day, perhaps?
Mr. Winton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, I'm here to testify in the bill that's before the committee, and if there's another bill before the committee, I'd be happy to bring treats and testify on that bill at that time.
Mr. Representative Simons.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Mr. Winton, as much as I'd like to take this up again another day, my question is, you know, if we end up amending, because we, in theory, could do that today, the committee has that authority, it'd still be the same bill. It would just be amending out Article 2. Would you support that, as if we move forward with Article 1 and just extended benefits to unemployed workers?
Mr. Winton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, I don't mean any disrespect, but I'm going to give you the same answer again, that I'm here to testify on the bill that's currently before the committee. If there's a different bill as amended, I'd be happy to testify on that at that time.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simons.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Winton, so you're not answering the question, and that's okay. I'm not going to badger you any longer. But so the message that I get is that the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce essentially wants to see these two articles tied together to move forward. That is the understanding that I have. And if you wish to clarify that, now would be the time. But otherwise, Mr. Chair, I'm done.
Mr. Winton, in your position, do you have the ability to comment on legislation before speaking with staff and members?
No, I don't.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually see a large member of the chambers up there, and I was wondering if Peter Larson might come down to the table.
Well, Representative Metza, we have people.
I drove all the way down here, Mr. Chair, multiple times, and I'm not going to sit around BS anymore on this issue. I've got people who are trying to feed their families.
Then, Representative Metza, we have people who have signed up for testimony. We're going to hear from
them.
That's
great. It's relevant to the question with CAM and the chamber policy, and I think it's appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Metza, when you're chairing this committee, you will decide who testifies. But today, I am, so I will decide who or the people testify. Do you have a follow-up question, Representative Metza?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Representative Winton? Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Next, Mr. Toby and Amenity, and on deck is Mr. Carr. And then we'll go to Mr. Hickey, and then we will go to any additional public testimony who wish to testify. Welcome to the committee. Please state your names for the record.
My name is Cliff Toby. This is Rory Amenity. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you guys today. My name is Cliff Toby. I'm a president of Local 2660. Of the Steelworkers Union up at Keetac. I represent 360 members who are out on the street right now trying to feed their families, trying to pay their mortgages, just trying to get by. I like to say I'm a third generation miner on my dad's side and a second generation miner on my mom's side because my grandma used to lay rail at the Hell Rust mine during World War II. I've been at Keetac for 20 years, and in that 20 years, this is the first time we've been forced to ask for an unemployment extension. And believe me, this is not an easy thing for us proud Iron Rangers to do. You see, we have been under attack like never before by illegally dumped steel from places like China, Brazil, and Japan. resulting in over 12,000 layoffs in the steel industry in the United States, with over 2,000 just in iron ore, and all the jobs that go with the iron mining jobs. I'm here today to urge you to help the people of the Iron Range who are hurting by no fault of their own, and to do so without playing politics and without without attaching unnecessary demands. This crisis we are facing is no different than a bridge falling in St. Paul or a river flooding in northwestern Minnesota, as we have no more control over other countries flooding our market than the people of Minnesota have over falling bridges and flooding rivers. The U.S. Department of Commerce announced anti-dumping duties of up to 266% yesterday, which we feel could be the beginning of the recovery for steel, but it will take some time, which is why we need this extension so we can bridge that time until we can get back to work, which is all that we really want to do. So again, I urge you to do the right thing, the Minnesota thing, and pass this extension clean, and to avoid playing politics with the livelihoods of the hardworking people of the Iron Range. I'd also point out that U.S. Steel, I've been informed, is going to be sending a letter in support of a clean bill, and as the last I checked, they were a pretty big member of the Chamber of Commerce, so thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Rory Emanetti.
Do you have any additional testimony you wish to offer?
Well, not really, but I'd just like to let you know that I worked 42 years in that mine.
Thank you. Any questions for the member, the testifiers? Thank you very much both for your testimony. Mr. Carr, then Mr. Hickey. I'm sorry, Representative Metza. Sorry.
Hey, Cliff, can you go back up? Rory.
Almost done.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry I'm getting emotional, right? Oh, but our communities are going through the most devastating economic downturn that we have seen since the 1980s when my family moved away when I was a kid. I feel like my district right now, if we were to do the math, is at around 20%. These guys right here got some gusta and some balls to come down here so many times and be polite for what they're getting put through right now. Special session fell apart. Today, we have an opportunity, Mr. Chair, and I talked to you about it last night, and I'd like to discuss it with them at the table right here. You guys, we have an opportunity to move the benefit language forward on a Senate file and to move the language separate for the rebate discussion on a House file, and to kick this off as, you know, kind of a, if anyone's seen Some of All Fears, a stand down between the two parties right now. I think it's a good, fair solution. I have not heard from one person in either the House or the Senate that's extremely opposed to talking about a cap. I heard testimony today from Deed that they're open to talking about a cap. In 1919, the legislature didn't gather in a special session for women's suffrage, is what we got together to work on. In 1936, we adopted Social Security. In 1952, we gathered, and Korean vets were extended unemployment benefits. No politics involved. In 82, we gathered as a body in special to work together, and there was a mass exodus of all of the industry in Minnesota. And we came together as a team, and we have that opportunity today. Since then, Representative Fabian, we've worked on flooding in your district. Last year, we worked on the avian flu, and there wasn't a Democrat who got up and said, we want GMO labeling for relief for avian flu. What I'm asking this committee to do today, these guys got to go back to their families and their friends and tell them, we didn't get it done. I take ownership in that because I'm sitting at the table today with an equal vote to all of you. So we have the opportunity, Mr. Chair, right now today to split those and to send them and in good faith work on standing things down, and over the next 2 weeks or week, essentially, moving into session, work in good faith that we'll hear you out on the cap. I think the major sticking point is the $272 million, what it does to the solvency. I've got a few amendments prepared that would allow this bill to move forward in the House file, where its next stop would be Ways and Means, where I didn't add in my amendment the $272 million rebate because I don't agree with it. However, it doesn't mean that I'm going to stop you from discussing that if that's what you feel is important. And that can go to Ways and Means. The Senate file can get cleaned up and sent to essentially the Senate when we get into session. And that still allows you not to take it up with an urgent matter if things fall apart between now and then. I don't think there's one person in the room here who will say we can't work together on trying to stand down. But what I am going to do is stand up and leave this room if we can't come to some kind of mutual agreement in working together, because I've come down to work group sessions. I have done hundreds and hundreds of cases for members who are getting laid off, whether it be Minsher, UI. I get to go home and tell people no. And that's what I've done for the last few months, and it's part of this job. And it's hard. We have the opportunity to do the right thing. I'd ask for all of you, looking you all in the eye, Bob, my members are hurting. My uncle's a monk in your district. We're a good family. These are good families. You come from good families. We're all sitting in the room together here. And if we can't put the politics aside today and move on, how is session going to go? Are we going to take up things like transportation and find middle ground there? I don't think so. So let's do the right thing. Set these on two separate tracks. It doesn't lock either side into anything other than saying we're working in good faith together that we can get this resolved.
Thank you, Representative Mehta. And thank you again to our testifiers. Mr. Carr? Mr. Hickey, and if there's anyone who I believe Representative Metz wanted Mr. Larson to testify, if you want to maybe be on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Carr. I am the Director of Government Relations and Legal Counsel for the Minnesota Retailers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Our association represents members with 1,200 storefronts across the state, and our retail community supports more than 780,000 jobs, which impacts one in five Minnesota workers. I'm here today to speak in support of this Leadall Amendment with specificity to the unemployment insurance reform provision of this bill located in Article 2, Section 1. Generally, what we hear from our retailers on provisions like this one that would revert excess resources back to the business is that they would take whatever amount that is and reinvest it back in their company and in their employees to continue to improve and grow their business. Our members agree with balance, in the sense that it's good policy to keep a fund well-balanced with necessary solvency. And it makes sense that when there is a shortage in resources in a necessary fund, that a trigger kicks on and solvency is reestablished. Similarly, it also makes sense that when there is a glut of resources in a fund, a trigger would kick on that would restore appropriate balance. I just want to thank the chair for bringing this bill forward and hearing it today. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no additional questions from members, we'll go to Mr. Hickey. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and wanted to speak to Article 2 of the bill today, and both Section 1 and 2 of Article 2. National Federation of Independent Business has about 13,000 members statewide, and we are the ones who have funded this surplus. This is a fund that's 100% paid for by employers. Employees don't contribute to unemployment insurance. Employers do. And we appreciate your efforts, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Smith, who's been working on this for about 2 years now, and others to try to refund some of this very high, historically high surplus back to employers. This is possibly the highest surplus we've ever had at $1.6 billion. This is a very high surplus, as we all know. And this is something you should do. This is being a good steward of this fund. Surpluses should not be allowed to exceed certain levels. I've been told by the department that, fortunately, this one can't be rated. I've seen a lot of surpluses rated by both parties in the years I've been around here. And these, in a lot of these cases, are some of the ones that, you know, hurt the most. We're 100% financed by employers. And so, fortunately, that can't happen here. But you're being good stewards today, trying to refund a reasonable amount back. And this is a very high surplus. We're likely going to have a very high surplus next year, too. And so, really appreciate what you're doing with Section 2 of the bill. As Mr. Carr mentioned, small employers tend to utilize this money in very positive ways, such as improving the business possibly buying more equipment. We'll have to see how big the rebate is, and it's going to depend on the size of it, and look forward to learning all that. We also support Section 1, which is a longer-term provision that would try to refund a little bit of money back over time when it meets the criteria in the future. But you're certainly going to be helping employers in dealing with a very burgeoning surplus with Section 2, so we appreciate that, and appreciate the chance to speak today.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hickey, I just had one quick question. I did hear you say that you also would support Article 1. Would you support Article 1 if it was standalone away from Article 2?
Mr. Hickey.
No, we're not taking a position on Article 1.
Representative Mahoney, or Representative Simonson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hickey, I did hear you say you also support Article 1 in your initial testimony. Was I incorrect?
Representative Simonson, he said Section 1. He was referring to Section 1 of Article 2.
Well, Mr. Chair, I almost am positive he said Article 1 also, but I just want him to correct me if I'm right or wrong.
Mr. Hickey, what did you say?
No, you did hear, did mishear Representative Simonson. We're not involved in Article 1 in the bill at this time.
Representative Simonson.
Very good. So, Mr. Hickey, the National Federation of Independent Business is also against extending unemployment benefits to the Iron Range. Is that correct?
Mr. Hickey.
I don't agree with that. We don't have a position on it. I don't know how that's opposing.
Any additional questions from members of the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. Members of the public, this is a public hearing. At this point, we'll take testimony from the public. Any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Representative Metza, did you want Mr. Larson to come down? Or I guess we can't subpoena anyone, but we can ask. But
well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question more would be, is the committee open to talking about splitting the files and letting something run separate? You know, I feel like if we're not going to do that, we can pretty much just let you stay in the room and none of us need to be here to do anything else. So I don't want to waste Mr. Larson's time or put him on the spot here since you thought it was irrelevant earlier.
Any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no members of the public wish to testify. No, but I'm saying now that we're going to public, is there anyone who wants to testify before we close the public comment portion of the bill? If not, then we'll close the public comment portion of the bill. And before we take up amendments, we'll have just a brief discussion on the bill before we start taking up amendments. But Representative Clark, did you have a comment? Because I have a couple of questions.
This is a question, actually, and I don't know if it involves any members of the public. But maybe our commissioners, I'm not sure. I'm wondering if we have an idea what that an average amount of the cut would actually provide for a business. I know it depends on the size of the business, the and all that, but I'm just wondering, do we have any figures on that? Has anybody ever figured that out?
We can defer to staff on that and ask them. I would tell you that right now, and staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but right now it's a payroll tax on the first $31,000 of income for each employee they have. So whether we're using the median or average would be two different numbers. But, for example, a person who has an employee who makes $124,000, they would pay the entire payroll tax portion in the first quarterly payment. So that would not reflect a rebate. They would not get a rate reduction or temporary rebate this year. It would be reflected in 2017. So I don't know if that's included in the numbers or not, but basically the number of employees, the average annual wage, that's what's going to factor into it. Does nonpartisan staff wish to add on to that at all, or did I cover it? Yeah. Representative Clark.
I'm just wondering if that has a number attached to it. I mean, that's the formula, but do we have any idea about any numbers?
Does anyone know the average or median number?
Mr. Chair, I don't think it's possible to calculate an average or median number. Businesses would get credits against future taxes in proportion to the taxes that they had paid in a previous year. So it would be based on the taxes they had paid in a previous year.
Thank you. Before we take up amendments, I did, there's been a couple of statements by DFL members that I wanted to have addressed, and maybe what we'll do is we'll wait until we're done marking up the bill, and then we'll address those questions then. Maybe that'll be best. So we have some amendments in our packet. Again, members working off the delete all amendment. Is there any amendment that a member wishes to offer? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer the 209A1 amendment.
209A1. Representative Mahoney, to your amendment.
Can you repeat the number, please?
Yes, it's the 209A1 amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, my amendment deletes everything but the first section. It deletes all of Article 2, including the... it basically creates a clean bill, which is what the governor... this is... Your bill here is the bill that the governor rejected 6 weeks ago. I really do... All I really want is to get unemployment benefits to members of the Iron Range that are hurting. I'm told there are people in this building that are open to discussing the other two pieces to this bill at a later date. I will listen. I might not discuss giving you an idea of where I'll go with my vote. But I do think that it is important that we get unemployment benefits extended for these miners on the range. They've just now started to try to get serious about the steel dumping into this country. It's going to take a while for that that rat to get through the snake, so to speak. So, members and Mr. Chair, I would ask that you take serious the A1 amendment and get a clean bill for the governor and the Senate to not mess around and get benefits to these members as soon as we can.
Thank you. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was speak in favor of the amendment. It separates the issues. The testifiers have even talked about the issues as being separate and that they don't really have an opinion on the one part of it, but they have an opinion on the second piece, and so I think this is appropriate. And, Mr. Chair, I request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Is there any additional questions or comments from members? In closing, I'll say that I would urge a no vote on this. By voting yes, you're voting for a multi-$100 million tax increase in the businesses of Minnesota, and would urge people to vote no. The clerk will take the roll.
Garofalo.
No.
Baker.
No.
Mahoney.
Yes.
Clark.
Yes.
Fabian.
No.
Gunther.
No.
Portman.
Yes to helping steel workers right away.
Isaacson.
Yes.
Johnson. Absent. Excuse, sorry. Lunin.
No.
Metza?
Yes.
Neuberger?
No.
O'Neill? Scott?
No.
Simonson?
Yes.
Smith?
No.
Swazinski?
No.
Vogel?
No.
Wagenius?
Not here.
Have her mark.
Excuse.
There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there other amendments that wish to be offered? Representative Metzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if I could move S02 or 0209A5.
Representative Metza moves the A5 amendment to Senate File 209. Representative Metza, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is some language that went back and forth in the discussions we had leading into this hearing throughout special session. This is the preferred language that encompasses the workers that need to be caught. There was some question on regard to the extraction and the specifics on it. So this kind of just clarifies, so our workers, say, at construction worker would be covered if they were laid off as well. And more affects our building trades and other industry folks more specifically than it does the suppliers and other groups. So my understanding is this amendment will be perceived as friendly.
Well, Representative Metza, it also deletes Article 2.
Did I move the wrong one?
That's a matter of opinion, not fact, Representative Metza. while we Representative Metzger, while you're looking at it, if we could have someone from D just briefly, this is a change in the definition of the qualification. My understanding is some preliminary work had been done on the fiscal note. Can someone from the department give us an estimate of the fiscal cost on this? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, we think this is somewhat neutral compared to the old language, and it probably will involve a similar number of laid off workers. This is workable.
So, Mr. Caligiuri, do we have a? Can you give us like a strike zone here of what the impact on the fiscal note would be?
Well, basically, the question is whether or not this would cover, as an example, construction workers that are working directly on the mine facilities. And we believe the other language that would have been included as well, but this kind of clarifies it even more.
Okay. So if we had a fiscal note with this language, what would be the difference?
It would be neutral.
It would be there's no fiscal impact to this language?
I don't believe there will be. Okay. I think it's pretty much a different choice of words.
Okay. So, Representative Metzger, why don't we do this? And it's obviously you can offer the amendment if you want, but with regards to this language, let's actually get a scored fiscal note from a fiscal analyst, either ready in time for Ways and Means or for the floor, whenever it is. Obviously, just putting aside the Article 2 section of it, let's just get that so we know where we're at, because I don't want to get... You know, because once it's in there, if we find out that we're mistaken, then we're really in trouble, right? So, is that cool? It's up to you if you want to offer the amendment, though.
I'm comfortable with buying that, Mr. Chair, but I would like to offer my others.
Okay, so we'll, House staff, if we could just submit a revised fiscal, and I don't know if you need the existing bill or if you need new language, just to get that documented. Hopefully, if they can try to get it in time for Tuesday, it would be helpful. Members wish to offer other amendments? Representative Metzger.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. And in our discussions here, I did tell members we'd have a few different options. And one of them would be the actual A4 that we were discussing, which essentially allows this Senate file to have the language.
Representative Metzger, which amendment do you have?
A4.
Okay, thank you. So we're on the A4. Representative Metzger moves the A4 amendment. Representative Metzger.
So, did you have something?
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Representative Metzger, we have a roll call requested. Representative Metzger, did you have anything else to add?
Yeah, so I'd just like to explain what I had asked the committee to be open to earlier. Essentially, this would allow us to modify the Senate file, send it as a standalone with the benefits for the employees in the Senate file, at which point the majority caucus here could make the decision whether or not they wanted to work with us in good faith over the next week or so here. And in order to make that work, though, Mr. Chair, I would also need to have you be willing to take up the House file and let another amendment of mine move forward, which essentially keeps the Moline language and allows the House file to move forward. So I guess what I would ask you is if you're willing to kind of discuss them both at once as an option.
Representative Metzger, my first question would be, was it your intent or did you accidentally delete the legislative findings in favor of mining that were in the original bill but are not in your amendment?
So, Mr. Chair, it was my intent to delete everything except for the cap, which I knew everyone was comfortable discussing.
Okay. So
the Moline language on the House file amendment that I had.
So the legislative findings in favor of the states greatly benefiting from a diversified mineral economy, you wanted that deleted from the bill?
I don't think it was relevant, Mr. Chair, to discussing the UI Trust Fund.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to make sure if it was in there or not. Again, I would oppose the amendment that's been offered. Certainly, procedurally, we can't take up two bills at once. But also, as we'll discuss after in further conversations, I think this is a good proposal that members of both sides of the aisle have voted for in the past. It's certainly something that is going to help Minnesota. I think there are preferred strategies for helping northern Minnesota that actually create jobs, and I'd like to have a conversation about those. We'll see how the debate is going forward. But on this provision, I would be against raising the keeping the current law, which would result in hundreds of millions of dollars sitting in the public sector as opposed in the hand of the small businesses, and I would urge a no vote. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for House Research staff on the legislative findings provision. My understanding is that we don't include legislative findings in our bills, and could you tell me in what cases that we do? This is pretty unusual.
Ms. Newman, can you give us all the instances of legislative findings in Minnesota statutes for memory, please?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, no, I can't give you all the instances. The fact of the matter is that legislative findings are sometimes included in statutory language, and it's pretty much what the legislature votes for, whether those findings go in or whether they are kept out.
Representative Hortman.
A follow-up. Do you recall at any point in the last 5 years the Minnesota Senate letting anything with legislative findings go through to law?
Yeah, that's a question.
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, I have not kept track of the Senate votes on things like that.
Yeah. Representative Hortman.
In keeping with House tradition, we do usually ignore what's going on in the Senate as much as we can. No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Roll call. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I understand what I'm voting on. So, Representative Metza, does this create a clean bill, or does this keep does this continue the holding hostage the iron workers for this this benefit? Are we keeping in the $272 million cut? Are we keeping in the 1.0 automatic high common multiplier, whatever the hell it's called?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, no, this allows for a clean bill with just the UI extension language.
Any additional comments or questions? Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair,
I'm calling you Representative Hortman. No, you screwed that up. Representative
Mahoney.
Hortman, I'm sorry.
Well, it's better than Mullery.
Yeah,
the Melissa
yes.
and the Mahoney, I think that's what it is. I would withdraw my request for a roll call.
All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there other amendments members wish to offer? Seeing none, we'll go to discussion of the bill. Discussion of the bill. Any questions or comments from members? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. I am uncomfortable, and I think we all should be uncomfortable, setting the precedent of holding hostage one group for another group. And remember that this will come back to bite us as this tax cut. Staff warned me 2 years ago when we put this first one through that this was setting a precedent, and now we're doing it again. And we are putting things at risk that we probably wouldn't have thought to do 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So I'm very uncomfortable with how this bill has played out. And then, again, to tie the two together, when the governor, the Senate, has very clearly said they want a clear bill, a clean bill, and they want to have that discussion later, that's just fine. But I'll be voting against this bill, and I'll be voting against this bill for the simple fact that we should not be holding one hostage for another, because I don't know when my city will be flooded and then what will be asked of them. I don't know where the next bird flu epidemic will hit and what we'll hold you hostage for, or somebody will hold you hostage for. And that's a bad precedent to set, members. And just remember it.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I left my house today, my wife said, so I'll see you in May, now that the session's getting going and we're getting committee. It's my first hearing, and I'm remembering some of the reasons why I'm not a fan of this place at times. I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks just talking to people, and they ask me, what do you feel about, how do you feel about going back to session, and what do you think is going to happen, and you know, everybody wants to prognosticate, and I, when I watch what we just did here today, I really get confused as to sometimes our purpose, because I understand that we have two sides that have competing ideologies that want to agree or find some common ground or give a little bit for compromise, and I think that's kind of the nature of the way this place works, and I don't begrudge that at all. I don't even begrudge the strategy to get across the tax cut you want, and necessarily I understand it's political. I think that a lot of my frustration comes with how we sit up here and pretend like the two aren't connected. You know, many times people have made comments, and maybe you'll make some comments that clarify this at the end, but I don't understand how we sit up here, and people sit here and talk, and the chamber comes up, and other groups talk about how we pretend like these things two aren't connected, and they just have an opinion on one of the bills, when they clearly are connected, because they're in the same bill. You know, they're very connected, and I struggle with that reality that we have up here, because I see that kind of stuff, and it isn't just you guys that do it. I've seen us do it, too, and I'm just as disgusted by that. When I see that kind of partisanship take over the way we handle people's lives like that. If we're having an honest discussion about a bill that's being vetted through the course of a session, and we have disagreements where we have to come to some compromises to make some good decisions, that's one thing. We're talking about a group of people that are hurting, and we have a responsibility to do something about it, and we're not. Not in the way that I think makes it clear and easy and quick to be done without holding a price tag on it. And that's the kind of thing I think people really rebel against. It's just really not a good thing. And I don't think it's good, let me be clear, when either side does it. And so I'm just incredibly disappointed, as this is my reminder of what it's like up here. And then we wonder why people don't trust legislatures.
And I guess I have a question. I was going to ask this earlier, but a question for the DFL members of the committee, because I've heard they use the words hostage-taking, playing politics, take the politics out of this, partisan, not clean. And I'm just wondering if a DFL member could explain to me, when the governor linked this to $15 million for Black Lives Matter for the special session, was that hostage-taking? Was that politics? And if it was, can you please show me the press release and the statements where DFL members were critical of that effort? Does any DFL member want to answer that question for me? Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, I don't remember that piece being tied to this, but if it was, it's still a bad thing. And to hold hostage any particular is not good. This, you're talking $15 million for disparities? Frankly, the bill for disparities is going to be much larger. That was just a down payment. This is a, what is it, $10 to one kind of hostage. This is, I better not go there. I need to be more mature. This is a hostage taking. And this is the politics of it all. And whenever, as Representative Isaacson said, whenever we play politics of this nature with people's lives, one way or the other, it's not good politics. It's not good policy. And to quote somebody that's got an office around here, it's just so un-Minnesotan.
And Representative Mahoney, can you enlighten the majority members? Can you explain to us how it's hostage-taking when we propose a bill and a measure that DFL members sent out press releases on and bragged about 2 years ago?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney,
this is not the bill. This is not even anywhere near the bill that we did 3 or 4 years ago, or whenever it was. This is an entirely different bill. This actually does put the trust fund at risk. It puts businesses in a spot, maybe not today, but down the road, in having to financially bump up faster as a recession was, if it was to hit, they will have to respond faster and faster. Whereas our bill was when we were coming out of a recession, and businesses did need the money, $500 million to invest in their businesses. They always need money to invest in their business, but we're on the upward side of our 150,000 or 125,000 jobs. Back then, we didn't have 120,000 extra jobs that had been entered into the economy. So this is an entirely different piece. So don't try and say it's the same, because it really, really is not. And you can go through the accountants and the actuarials, and, you know, actuarials just don't have a sense of humor. They just tell you the truth. And they will tell you that this is an entirely different bill, and the circumstances are entirely different, so it is not the same.
But Representative Mahoney, both these bills, the one that the DFL was in favor of, the one that the governor sent a press release out on, and this bill, reduce revenue on a temporary basis to the UI Trust Fund. The difference is that when you guys did it, the trust fund was half the size that it is right now. And the allocation you guys made was bigger than the one we're allocating now. So we're in this bizarro situation where I have to have DFL members explain to me why they're against something that they were in favor of. A proposal, your proposal, took more money, reduced more money to the trust fund. It did it when the trust fund was smaller, and it did it in a larger fashion. So explain
it. Better than you.
Well, as a matter of perspective.
I'll explain that to you, Mr. Chair.
We are eager to hear the argument.
And my argument was just made. This is an entirely different bill, an entirely different time in our economy. You're a very smart man. You understand the economy just as well as many of us, the rest of us, do here. When we did that particular bill, we were coming out of a recession. Businesses really needed, and all the projection was for continued growth, astronomical growth, actually. And we met all those particular marks. We added 125,000 jobs and added that money into the UI Trust. Now we are at the top. We are at the top of the pyramid, so to speak. Well, maybe we got a little ways to go. But you and I both know the recessions and economies, I should say economies, are cyclical. We have been in this good cycle for a long time. Conservative principles would say to be prudent, to think in the long term, to be careful. This is not a carefully figured out bill. This is at 7 or 8 years into a recovery. Entirely different. And it's the circumstances. The words may be a little bit close to the same, but you can make words the same and have entirely different meanings. And that's what this bill does.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against this bill, and the reason is I support the first part, and I don't support the second part. What's really clear right now is there are people who are paying their mortgages and paying for groceries with unemployment checks. And what's also really clear is that their unemployment benefits run out the first week of session. And I don't know if your family has ever had to pay its bill with unemployment benefits and not know when's the future job coming, but it's a pretty scary time. And it's the wrong thing to do to tie these two issues together. What Representative Mahoney did in 2013 was completely unrelated to providing specific and limited economic relief to a particular part of the state that was hard hit by particular circumstances. I might well support Article 2 during the session when we have more time to talk about it and we can craft it and make sure that it's prudent and that we're protected in case we are going into a recession. It may well be something we could have broad bipartisan agreement on. But to tie the two issues together delays getting help to people who need help paying their bills right now. And the commonality that the governor brought up, I don't believe that he issued ultimatums, but there's 20% unemployment on the Iron Range, and there's 20% unemployment in North Minneapolis. And if we were going to have a special session on economic downturn and helping people in need, it makes sense to talk about two different places in the state with 20% unemployment.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we go forward with this, I'm encouraged to see some amendments that will come forward on the floor, hopefully, that will promote some pipeline building. If we're looking to extend jobs and create more jobs, and my heart goes out to the Iron Range and all the things that have been going on there.
Your heart goes out. Show it with your vote. Kick me out if you want, Mr. Chair. We don't have a voice here anyway.
Representative Neuberger.
Mr. Chair, given the the tension of the of this situation. I forgive Representative Metzer for that because I understand it's a hard issue. It's all right. But the point being is we need jobs throughout the state. And if this is this important, which I believe it is, then let's see some amendments. Let's see some DFL support for the pipelines that the governor has been shutting down time and time again. Where are our pipelines? We could put jobs on the Iron Range right now. What about PolyMed? We could put jobs on the Iron Range right now. What about the Clean Power Plan? We haven't talked about that. I could talk all day about that, and you know I can and I will, and eventually I will. We have, trust me, it's coming, but we have a governor's policy that is going to pull the plug on jobs all over the state. I look forward to the amendments that are going to help to foster economic growth and bring jobs, especially at the Iron Range. So thank you.
Representative Baker and Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this bill. I think it's good because, number one, we need to get the Rangers the help they need right away. And the one thing that I feel that needs to be identified as well as what's also good about this bill, too, is that it helps the businesses up there, too, that need this relief.
They were just the idea.
No, I'm talking about the small business colleagues that I have up there. I lived up in the range for 12 years. I know, and I heard the testimony from the president from the AFL-CIO about they've had small grocery stores closing and this and that. But what they also need is relief from their overhead to run their business. So while we can actually have a win-win here, we can have small businesses around all over Minnesota, but especially the ones who need it the most, also up on the range who need it the most. But this will actually help in twofold. And I think this is a very good bill that actually provides those folks the relief that they need as well. So, again, I think this is a smart bill. It's efficient. We can get both of these sectors the help they need right away, especially where they need it the most on the Iron Range. So nobody was standing up for my business colleagues up on the range, and I think this is an important statement that we also have to say is that those small businesses need every little bit of help they can get because they don't have the sales and they don't have the ability to make the payments like they used to before either. So I do hope we can move quickly. We're meeting ahead of session on this. This is an important thing. I hope that we can pass this on our very first day. Thank you.
And Representative Metza, do you want to do the closing or do you want to speak now for the DFL?
I don't really care.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, you just said that we don't give a crap about our local businesses on the range because we aren't passing a UI bill. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding?
I don't think I said that you don't give a crap. I think what I said was this also supports the small businesses as well as the workers.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do any of your buddies belong to the local chambers?
Representative Baker.
You know, I don't know who's a member of the local chamber or the Minnesota chamber or the NFIB or the Retailers Association. I haven't done a survey. I don't know. But if they're in business and they're an employer like I am, I consider them a colleague. Whether they're a member of an organization or not, I think that I know what it's like. Living on the range in International Falls through the time when they shut down Insulite, it was a really, really hard time. I wasn't an owner then, but I could see what they were going through, so I know a little bit. Not what they're going through. I don't want to tell them that I think I know what this is like. But I think I kind of know some of the things that folks here don't know. But I think as a business owner, as an employer, they also would love to get a little help too. So,
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, I just find it really offensive that you'd be saying the range delegation hasn't been working hard with our business community, seeing as we voted with you quite a few times last year. And essentially, what our business community is actually asking for is to ride this along separate, because the longer this gets delayed, the less dollars in those guys' pockets are missing from their stores. And the $31 they save doesn't amount to a hill of beans compared to the money that those guys go in with. So I think that your insinuation and trying to tie this all together is a little disingenuous, just like this whole dog and pony show we've been part of today. And I can't say how disappointed I am to be a Minnesota legislative member today. and over the last few months, because this is absolutely ridiculous that we have taken a special session fight and carried it in now to how we're going to launch the regular session. And essentially, all of you are telling me you don't care really about the benefits, it's about the tax break. And I'm open to working with you on it. I told you that today. My colleagues have told you that today. Deed told you that today. So essentially what you're setting the stage for, Mr. Chair, is going in, locking horns with the Senate, essentially saying that it doesn't matter if we get this money out right away. Speaker Dowd is committed to working with us to get this done in the first week. Just tell us what you're going to do, what you want. We have no idea what you want, a tax break on this? We've offered to work with you on a cap. So, we still have the opportunity to do the right thing right now today, and I apologize for getting up and leaving like I have. I apologize to the committee for my tone and tenor. But I can't tell you how disappointed I am to be a member with you today, allowing this to continue. These guys got to go home today, and plenty of gals waiting for them who work at the plant as well, and unemployed too. We've got two people who can make it down on short notice. And essentially, we came down here for a little public dog and pony show so the GOP could get up and say, yeah, we want to provide relief, but we're still going to hold it hostage to the $272 million and the exact language we want. What I'm trying to offer today is a way out for both of us to win. And really, at the end of the day, all I care about, Representative Fabian, would you want to vote for a clean water bill to help with flood relief in Roseau next time it comes? Is that the precedent we want to set for Minnesotans, that political hardship is going to be used for political chips? Is that the precedent that this committee wants to set, that this body wants to set moving forward? It's ridiculous. I mean, let's do the right thing here today and move forward. We haven't voted on the bill. We've got amendments here that can get it into shape. I'm willing to work with it, waiving the 24-hour rule. But to sit and put our people through this from November through today, to not make an inch of progress, I see Representative Hackbarth here joining us in the committee, and I don't remember the Mining Committee ever coming up once to talk about UI extension, to meet with the workers to see how we could make a program better. Neither did this committee, Mr. Chair. You want to know who was at those meetings? Deed. Minsure. State employees going out and doing the hard work while we sit and fought politics here. And I joined them at many of them. I missed about two. And I learned a lot about how the system could get better. And I sure hope we can do better than this today and send a strong message, if not tonight, in the first week of session, that you've had a chance to think and are going to decide to put miners before mining.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a really difficult issue. And I think that I first want to give credit to Representative Metsa, Moline, Anzels, other legislators on the range, but more importantly to the workers that took the time to come down here and have taken the time to come down here time and time again to try to resolve the situation. I do have to tell you with all honesty that I have spent the last couple of months talking with a lot of folks in my district about different things, and this topic does come up often. And in all honesty, people are frustrated with politics. And I think some of that stems from what we see on the national stage every single day. But a lot of it has to do with this type of thing. And whether it is real to somebody or whether it's, you know, perception that the Minnesota legislature is playing politics with somebody's livelihood, or was, you know, trying to, it's beyond livelihood, really. I mean, some of these folks, their benefits are going to run out next Tuesday. And it's not livelihood anymore. It's how are they going to buy food? You know, how are they going to make the house payment? How are they going to make the car payment? Where are they going to buy gas to put in the car? That's what it's down to. And I learned a pretty incredible lesson over the interim that it's probably not a wise choice to offer a suggestion in somebody else's district about how to do things. And I'll tell you that if you go and you spend some time on the Iron Range and you talk to some of these families, I mean, just take 5 minutes and talk to these two folks right here. This is real. But I think what my point is that people are tired of this political games, and they perceive this as a game. I mean, here's a case where we've had a couple of opportunities to put forward a clean bill that is simply extending benefits to unemployed workers. Plain and simple. We could have passed that and been out of here a while ago. But the perception is that there's a game being played that the majority party, wants to tie UI tax reform to extending those benefits. And I have a sense, and I'm not questioning anybody's motives, certainly, but I have a sense of how this will play out, because my gut tells me to stand on my principle and vote no on this bill. And it tells me to do that because I don't believe in that this UI reform package is, the timing is not right for this. I'm absolutely willing to talk about it going forward separately, but my gut tells me to vote no on this bill for that particular reason alone. But then I look into the future and I can just see, I mean, can you just see the headline? Representative Simonson votes to not extend unemployment benefits to unemployed Iron Rangers. Now that's a very real perception, and I'm not questioning anybody here that might do that. But there, as you know, there are a lot of other interests in politics that might. And that really doesn't bother me so much. But my challenge to you, as we talked about some of these other amendments, was that let's take the politics out of this and let's pass a clean bill. And it's a little disingenuous if I ask you to do that, and though you didn't, if I don't at least offer the same in return. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to vote yes on your bill, the way it is. And even though my gut tells me that I shouldn't, but if I have to increase taxes on business owners across Minnesota, because that's what this will do, because we'll hit that ratchet point sooner than later, and that will increase payments that they'll have to make. But if I have to increase taxes on business owners in order to get a bill passed that's going to extend unemployment benefits to Iron Rangers, then so be it. At least then the headline will say, Representative Simonson votes to raise taxes on business to help Iron Rangers. I can live with that one. But we got to get past this political gamesmanship. I mean, this is silly. There are times when we can debate all day long about tax policy and whether we should give corporate tax breaks or personal property tax breaks, and we can stand on principle, and we can do that for hours. But this is silly. So we're obviously not going to get to what I would consider to be a clean bill, but I'm going to call your bluff, and I'm just going to vote yes on your bill because I'm willing to do that in order to extend these benefits to Iron Rangers. Thanks.
Any additional comments or questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, I'll offer some closing comments, and then we'll vote. Members, I want to thank you for the dialogue on this bill today. I would tell you that I had a different way for addressing problems in northern Minnesota with regards to economic development. What I wanted to do is I wanted to pass a comprehensive economic development package that was focused exclusively on northern Minnesota, which would do many things, the provisions in this bill, but it would also waive the certificate of need and certify the route permit applied for the three pipelines in northern Minnesota as done and tell the PUC that they shall issue those route permits. $3 billion of private sector investment dedicated to northern Minnesota. Put trade workers to work, safely move energy across Minnesota, create jobs this spring, not in unemployment benefits, but create private sector jobs. Growing property tax revenue, not raising property taxes, growing property taxes through the pipelines, which in turn gives local communities in northern Minnesota the opportunity to invest in their wastewater infrastructure, their roads, which in turn creates additional salaries and additional jobs. That's the plan I wanted to do. It was better for Minnesota, it was better for northern Minnesota, it created private sector jobs, it was better for the environment. And the statesman in my caucus told me that no, I couldn't do it. that yes, it was better for northern Minnesota. Yes, it would create jobs. But that issue would create a civil war in the DFL caucus. That the environmentalists and the trade workers would fight a vicious battle against each other. It'd be Metro versus northern Minnesota, and it would be bad. So for political reasons, we couldn't go forward with that. So when I sit here, so when I was brought back to me, that idea was rejected. It was, let's find something that everyone can agree on. Let's find something that the Democrats have voted for and stated their support for in the past. And so this is what we came up with. Something which reduces revenue to the UI Trust Fund, just like the Democrats did. Something which provides immediate relief to every business in Minnesota, just like the Democrats did. But the only difference being that this rebate, these reductions, take place when the trust fund is twice as big as it used to be. Now, I want to thank the members of the DFL caucus, because I told the people who disagreed with me that no matter what, the minority party was going to fight us on this, and that they were going to play politics with it. So my advice to the DFL, keep talking. Just keep saying it, because maybe you'll turn enough votes in my caucus, and we'll do it my way, and northern Minnesota will be better off. With that, all those in favor of passing Senate File 20209 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is adopted. The next bill on the agenda is House File
2032.
There is a delete all amendment. The chair will move the delete all amendment for House File 2032. Is there any discussion to get the bill in the form the author would like? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. There are... Yep. So the chair will move. The motion before us is House File 2032, as amended to Ways and Means. There are amendments that are the same ones we voted on before. Members do have the opportunity to offer those amendments now if they wish to. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I understand this to be is the same exact language as on the Senate file. So we're moving two bills out of here today. One's a Senate file, one's a House file with the identical language.
Representative Hartman, that is correct.
And Mr. Chair, can you explain to me why if you explained it earlier in the committee, I missed it.
Sure. Representative Hartman, my understanding is that the leadership of the chambers are in discussions about the best way to approach this, and this is put forward as, and I'm not privy to all the conversations that are going on, but this is what we're told to do. So,
Mr. Chair, can you tell me what the different pathways for the two different bills would be? They both are going from here to Ways and Means?
Yes, both the bills are going to Ways and Means, and I can talk with you offline about some of the conversations that are going on. But both bills are going to Ways and Means. It would provide two different vehicles.
Yeah,
and that's really all I know, and I think my understanding is leadership of members wanted some flexibility as this goes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Is there any additional discussion? First of all, does anyone want to offer any of the amendments? Okay, seeing none. The chair renews his motion to have House File 2032 as amended passed and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The bill is adopted. Members, this completes our agenda for the day. Thank you, and we'll see you all next week. This committee is adjourned. Yeah.